Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right, we're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shotty, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
Ernest, what's up? Look, if creating content is more than just a passion project for you, it's time to make the passion profitable. With Kajabi, you can easily diversify your revenue, build your brand, and transform your audience into loyal customers. I know firsthand how challenging it could be to juggle content creation and business development, but Kajabi makes it easy to streamline everything in one place. As a creator, you are your brand, so your business should reflect exactly what you envision. With Kajabi, not only can you build your business your way, but you can also keep every cent of what you earn. It's an all-in-one platform that lets you focus on what matters most, your content and your audience. And let's face it, we all need a little help sometimes, especially when you're a one-person show. But you don't need to hire a full-time team. You just need Kajabi. Kajabi is a leading all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. Whether you're a coach, content creator, or educator, Kajabi makes it easy to transform your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, and more. The best part? Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue. Everything you create is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. On top of that, Kajabi gives you robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates. Everything you need to grow your business seamlessly. And here's the thing, you don't need a massive audience to make sustainable income. Thousands of creators are making six and seven figures with Kajabi, even with less than 50,000 followers. So if you're navigating the challenges of generating revenue as a creator, Kajabi can be the game changer you need. Right now, Kajabi is offering an incredible deal, a free 30-day trial to help you kickstart your business. Just head over to kajabi.com/earn to get started. That's kajabi.com/earn. Join the creators and entrepreneurs who've made over $7 billion on their platforms and take control of your financial future with Kajabi today. kajabi.com/earn. Don't miss out on this opportunity to turn your passion into profit. Earners, what's up? Y'all know the adage, buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/earn. That's fundrise.com/earn. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Right. So, John, heard a lot about you, my brother.
Hey, heard a lot about you guys too, obviously. So appreciate the conversation.
First of all, congratulations on everything that you've been able to accomplish. An extremely impressive resume for sure.
Thank you, brother. Really, really appreciate that.
So I want to start out just on the inspiration. What inspired you and your brother to start to Burns Brothers Incorporated during social unrest of 2020?
Yeah, no, great question. And just to kind of give you guys the background, my brother and I have a company called the Burns Brothers, which is more of a holding company now. We have seven businesses. We have an event production company. We produce concerts, award shows. We produce the first ever Juneteenth concert at the White House for President Biden. For the last 2 years, we have a marketing company. We do multicultural marketing across the country. We have a diversity company. My brother used to be the chief diversity officer at Citigroup for a number of years. So we do diversity work for Fortune 10s and Fortune 100s. As you guys saw from the video, we have a private membership club called HQ DC House, which is really focused on bringing people of color together to network, to collaborate, but to make an impact. And we're opening our second location in Nairobi, Kenya in October. So super excited about that. We have a performance and wellness and company. And then we're also opening a restaurant in DC next month. And I also want to bring into the fact that we're doing tons of work in Africa. So my brother and I partnered in a large call center BPO company, which is a business outsource processing company about 10 years ago that was based in South Africa at the time. And now we're in 6 countries and we're the largest private employer on the continent of Africa with 21,000 employees in Egypt, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Rwanda, Kenya, and South Africa. And so I wanted to give you that overview before I kind of talk to you about the genesis of the Burns Brothers, because the genesis of the Burns Brothers was framed in impact and framed in a moment in time where I think we all can remember what we were feeling in June of 2020, the height of COVID, the height of social unrest. I was a partner in a law firm in DC. My brother was a COO of a Fortune 500 company. And we looked at ourselves. My brother called me one day in May. I'll never forget. He said, "Hey, bro, we got to change the narrative for people that look like us. And I don't think the jobs that we're doing right now are really moving the needle." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "I think we can make a difference. Let's do something for ourselves and for our people and our communities." And so June of 2020, in the height of COVID, the height of social unrest, I dropped my nose at my law firm and quit my job to launch a company called the Burns Brothers because we believed in the difference that we could make. And so everything we do across this country, across Africa, is how can we mobilize, support, uplift, and empower people of color, specifically Black people?
Not bad. I mean, we always talk about in our space as entrepreneurs taking that imperfect action. Before you made that decision, what are the things you're contemplating? Is it do I have to hit this financial goal before I do it? Or I've done enough to put myself in a position where if I want to take this leap and say, this is where my values is, this is where my purpose is, I can go. What was that moment like for you as you're processing it?
No, really good question. I think that moment was, you know, obviously a very difficult decision, right? I think everybody's telling you, man, it's the unknowns or tons of unknowns, the world's in chaos. But I had a mentor told me one time, if you have a fallback, you fall back. And I think at that moment in time, we were so purposeful and we were so passionate about the work that we were going to do. And we really felt we could change circumstances, we could change the world. And so the challenge from a decision-making standpoint wasn't as overwhelming because we believed it was divine. It was our God's calling. And so from a decision-making standpoint, it wasn't that hard. And we always knew, I always knew I could go back to law, right? I could always be a lawyer. I could always go back to that law firm environment. But I said, there's few moments in your life that you can really take a leap and believe in yourself. And that was that moment.
So let's talk about Africa. And you said you did a lot of work in Africa. And that's something that, you know, I think a lot of people are interested in. We went to Africa. We went to Egypt, went to Nigeria, but specifically Ghana. We went to Ghana 2 times this year and we are working on some business out there. So the opportunities is endless, but a lot of people don't know where to start. So talk about, can you walk us through your journey on the continent? Like, where did you start? How were you able to scale? What challenges did you have? And what do you see the future of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, no. So number one, the power of partnership, right? You can't do anything from a business entrepreneur standpoint without partnerships. And so I mentioned my brother was the CEO of a Fortune 500 company prior to us launching the Burns Brothers. That company happened to be a company called Conduit. And Conduit's the largest call center company in the world. My brother had 38,000 employees across 16 countries, but none were in Africa. And so Visa, his relationships, we got into Africa through a partner he had known. And took us to South Africa about 10 years ago and said, "Hey, I want you to meet these guys. They're doing great work." And the work wasn't necessarily call center per se. It was call center, but the work was providing opportunities for Black people. I don't know if you all know, and these gentlemen probably know, the unemployment rate across the continent of Africa for skilled Africans is outrageous. And these are young, talented, hardworking people that just have done all the right things. They've gone to school, they got the degrees, but no opportunity comes to them. And so we thought, what could we do? Not thinking of it from like a business standpoint, but from a human being standpoint, what could we do could change those circumstances? And so we became partners in that organization with the premise that we had American company relationships that we could drive business that would create jobs and opportunity. And so looking at it, a lens of advocacy, a lens of like cultural change and impact was ultimately was the driving force. But then obviously from a business standpoint, through that, we were able to build more business relationships. And then through that, we built more business relationships and grew the company across the continent. And Visa, that company, we're able to now open our membership club, HQ, in Nairobi, Kenya, in 4 months. And so God is great. The blessings are abundant. But I think it's always leading with the lens of advocacy first and impact, and then the entrepreneurship kind of second.
What are some of the challenges that you face out there? Because we're out there, we saw a tremendous opportunity, but there are challenges. Like even in Ghana, they lost power for 2 weeks. And that's something that we can't even imagine, something like that happening in America. But what are some of the challenges that you've been facing as an entrepreneur in Africa?
Yeah, I think technology is one, infrastructure is one for sure. I think, I don't know, hands up, how many people in the room have been to the continent? Okay, so a few people. I think that's one. I think sometimes just the level of liaising across to a whole new side of the world from like an employee standpoint can be challenging too. One thing that's oftentimes I thought was going to be a challenge, but it's really not, is the level of understanding of American culture across the continent of Africa. It's unbelievable. And so that was a pleasant surprise how much they embrace American culture and they're so knowledgeable of American culture. I think too, in some parts of Africa, there are specific things that change, just like United States with whatever administration is in office. And right. So I think that can be a challenge too, making sure you navigate the political landscape. But I think those are evolving and I think those are changing for the better. And what I'll say, and I've said it for years now, Africa is not the future. Africa is the present. And I think from an entrepreneurship standpoint, you think about Black people in this country. If you're not focused on what that connectivity looks like from an entrepreneurship standpoint, from the outreach standpoint with the continent of Africa, you're doing yourself a disservice and you're doing the business a disservice.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you got the HQ DC house, and most of us, you know, who travel and been to places, we've seen these type of houses. We've seen Soho House. So I think it's brilliant that we have one that's ours that we can call our own from a membership side. But I want to talk about the intentionality, and maybe it was done very intentional. Like you had it in DC. You could have done it in New York, maybe Miami, Houston, Chicago, but you chose Nairobi. Talk about that, because when we think Nairobi, and most people, if they've watched like the Avengers, they've seen Nairobi in a film, but the tech center that it's become, the hub that it's become for East Africa, what was the intentionality in choosing specifically that place?
Yeah, a number of different factors went into that. So number one, as my brother mentioned, it's an economic hub for East Africa. And it's actually the only African country that has a strategic partnership with the US. So from like a connectivity standpoint with the US, that was important, right? And we knew the trajectory of Kenya specifically, and specifically Nairobi, based upon just being there so much, knowing the government, knowing their focus, and I understand the vision of the US partnership too, and just the way that it's being kind of placed as the Singapore of Africa. So from like a trade and economic hub, all that made perfect sense. And then me and my brother, we've always been focused on Africa. And like, we wanted to be those conveners, those conduits connecting African-Americans in this country to Africans on the continent, because we believe that we can never really realize our true potential if we're not connected with all the amazing people across the continent. So those were two things. And then the third thing was we wanted to think outside the box. It's easy to go to a space like, you know, Detroit, or go to New York, or go to Atlanta. It's not easy, but it's easier. And I don't think the impact would have been as large. And I think for us, we're all about impact. And I think doing something and now creating, and what you brothers are doing too, you're creating opportunity and you're facilitating communities that people could never be a part of unless you were providing that facilitation. And so now us opening the membership club in Nairobi, not only can our members probably experience something they could never have dreamed of experiencing, but now we can introduce Nairobians to our members. And it's just a beautiful thing to be able to create a space and facilitate community that you're actually not only driving change, you're driving pure impact.
So you also, you put together the Juneteenth concert at the White House, right?
Yep, last 2 years.
Yeah, we got invited to that this year, but we couldn't make it. But All the pictures I saw on Instagram looked amazing. So congratulations.
Thank you.
What is the inner workings of putting something together like that? And how were you able to, you know, make that connection with the government?
Yeah, so we have an event production company at the Burns Brothers called Styled by the Burns Brothers that we do, you know, events across the country. But we've always been very politically active. We did a lot within the Obama Foundation. I think just being in Washington for 20 plus years built friendships and built relationships and built networks. So I think number one, never overestimate the power of network, right? And to make sure that you're building core relationships that are genuine and based upon an equal kind of give and take. And so when President Biden first did his first Black History event at the White House, right at the kind of the middle of COVID, it was actually the president's first event, and they wanted to do something special. And so I pitched them on a club quarantine from the East Wing. This is when D. Nice was like killing it, still, he's still killing it. And D and I are very, very close. And so I pitched the White House, I pitched D, and they're like, yo, this is dope. And so we did a whole club quarantine from the East Wing of the White House in February of 22. And the first lady came in the club quarantine, the vice president came, the president. So it was just like this massive success. And it really introduced the White House to a whole new audience and obviously propelled D to even do even greater stuff. And so that first touch point opened opportunities. And so last April, one of the senior advisors at the White House came up to me at my membership club and she's like, hey, we're throwing out an idea of doing a Juneteenth concert at the White House. Would you be interested in help us curate that experience? And so this is last year, Juneteenth had just become a federal holiday. This had never been done before in the history of the White House. And so I had a call with them on Monday. We started talking concepts. And I said, hey, it could be this, it could be that. And then a month and a half later, through teammanship, through a lot of hard work, we produced the first ever Juneteenth at the White House. Juneteenth concert at the White House. President Biden spoke, VP Harris, and it was a magical moment. And so that led to us doing it again this year and really creating something special. My brother and I grew up in Texas, and Juneteenth was really a Texas holiday for the longest because that's when slaves in Texas found out that they were free a year and a half after the Emancipation Proclamation. And so to do something that was so special to us for so long and really bring it to such a national and global scale, you can't help but be so thankful.
Yeah, that's incredible. We spoke, you know, a little bit upstairs about growing up in Texas, but I want to talk about brotherhood, something obviously we've experienced when creating Earn Your Leisure and the benefits of it, where most people tell you you shouldn't work with family. Talk about the relationship that you and your brother have, how it's worked to your benefit, and maybe some challenges that you face, right? You guys may not see eye to eye on all your ideals, but you've created something very special. Talk about that.
Yeah. And my brother always says it so eloquently, too. You know, he's an older brother, right? So he's 4 years older. And so Nani's our general manager at HQDC House. So she knows how he can still be a big brother. So he still big brothers me sometimes. So I think that's one of the challenges. But I think what he always says and speaks about, which is so brilliant, is he's known me all my life and I've known him all my life. And so it's like a great team. Like, you know, to pass the ball based upon their skill set or to play defense when they are kind of lacking in defense, because I think you know each other's kind of motions and how you move so well, and you know the level of expertise one person brings and how they can ultimately support the whole. And so as we've grown business, we've really been focused on being accountable to one another, being honest with one another, sometimes being brutally honest with one another, because I think as long as you place the focus on the whole and not the individual, then everything's gonna work out in your favor. And my brother comes from a military background. He went to West Point, served the military for 13 years. And we always talk about in the military, there's like this pyramid of priorities, right? The pyramid of priorities is number one, your country, number one, the president, number two, your country, number three, your unit, number two, your squad, number three, your platoon, whatever it is. But in corporate America, there's a pivot of that priority, right? Because oftentimes the commitment is to the individual as opposed to the organization. And we've really framed everything we've done from a cultural standpoint across all of our organizations, putting the organization the priority and the individual not. And so I think using that from a cultural approach has changed too, changed like our dynamic and changed our brotherhood and changed like the business as well.
So to have a social club, you have one in DC and you're opening one in Kenya. What is the business model that's actually a thriving business? Because I know Soho House, I think, is struggling. A few other businesses similar have kind of struggled post-COVID. So what makes your situation unique, and what are some things that you've implemented to kind of beat that curve of other similar type of businesses that have helped fall on hard times?
Yeah, so I mean, we're very specific about our demographic and who we're focused on engaging. And it's definitely, you know, Black professionals who are really built around impact and community. And so knowing your market and being very specific to your market, that's been helpful for us. I think the diversity of like offerings, obviously at our core, we're a membership club. So it's membership, monthly or annual dues. But because of our location in Washington, we've been very, very fortunate. I don't know folks who are familiar with DC, but we have the building at 600 F Street right across from the Capital One Arena. And so from a private event standpoint, we do upward of like 15 to 20 private events a month. And so from a revenue standpoint, that's been substantially helpful to supplement the membership revenue too. And we were somewhat intentional around the building that we took over. It's multi-level, right? So you can have a member event, member kind of activation, but do private events on different levels as well. So it provides a lot of different use cases for the space. And we're taking over the bottom level of that building to open our restaurant. Because we were learning that as members left, as private events left, they were going to other bars and restaurants to eat. And we're like, we want to control the attendee experience. And so just learning what gaps exist and basically pivoting to kind of fill those gaps has kind of led to the success of the organization. And we're still learning. So it's definitely not a perfect process.
So you have a social house. It seems very intentional and probably makes a lot of sense to have a social network. Talk to us about HQ Global. Something that they should be looking forward to coming at the end of this year?
Yeah. So this is, and I didn't even share that in my opening, but this is probably one of the most exciting things that we have coming online. So we've been building for the last 7 months, basically our own IP. Think of it as like a Facebook for Black professionals around the world. And so we're launching this concept called the HQ Global Network this fall, where we have a goal of connecting 1 million Black professionals in the online virtual community across the world by 2026. I think as this...
Hold on. We should be clapping for that. Yeah. That's like six claps. All right, John. All right, John, proceed.
Yeah, because I think to your point, bro, I think there's power in like the house concept, but there's really power in the global community concept. Because I think as the world becomes more flat, people travel more, people become more connected. I think we need global communities specific for Black people. I think what we find most troublesome is when we travel, it's hard to like find your tribe, right? And so how can we create a space where you know where your tribe is? And so we are launching this fall in 100 cities around the world, from Singapore to Medellin to Addison, Ethiopia, to Detroit, Michigan. And we are having ambassadors in all these cities around the world. And we will have communities that will actually be in person, but through this virtual platform, we'll be able to convene, we'll be able to network, we'll be able to collaborate. Because I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, the reason we're successful, and I'm sure the bros can attest to the reason they're successful, is the power of like their network and the ability to reach people. So if you're able to create a space and facilitate community around the world, I think it's endless opportunity.
So you have a startups company, as far as you have a technology component that's related to the physical component, right? Kind of similar, but in a way a little different. Is the idea to have a physical location in every one of the major cities that you have with the app?
No, I think the physical location model, to your point earlier, is a challenging model because real estate's expensive, right? And I think it's hard to maintain that level of real estate. And I know Soho House is having challenges with that too. I think you create space for people to ultimately build communities themselves. And so we're just facilitating communities, and the people themselves are building communities. And so I don't think you need a physical house to do that. I mean, while we might open some additional physical houses based upon kind of the model we're working through, there's no intention to open physical houses in all those locations, but really create a medium for people to come together and build community around the world.
It's essentially like LinkedIn, kind of.
But even bigger than LinkedIn, not saying bigger than LinkedIn, that's a bold statement, but even different than LinkedIn in the sense that like, you will be able to, if you're coming to Baltimore from, again, I say coming from Addis, Ethiopia, you already have that HQ community in Baltimore that you already talking with, but it's not framed in a professional network our work network, like LinkedIn, it's kind of framed in like building core genuine relationships, whether it be social, whether it be professional, whether it be philanthropic, whether it be social impact driven. It's really building genuine relationships with people who are like-minded, share the same values, and really are your tribe. Because I think as I travel, and I'm sure you guys can attest to it too, there's so many people around the world that share the same values, but we're just not connected. And so what if there was a way to connect all of us? And I think as we think this through the political climate that's taking place in the United States right now, I think we're going to need a global community for Black people to really be able to find refuge. And so I think we weren't even building this based upon kind of the chaos that's happening now, but I think it will definitely fill a need based upon some of these outcomes that we're seeing right now.
One more question. So did you raise money for that?
So this is what I really want to get into. And this is my brother said, you got to make sure you talk about this point. And so even the challenge of being a successful Black entrepreneur, you still face a capital challenge, right? It was so shocking to us. My brother was the COO of a Fortune 500 company. I was a partner at a law firm. I was the first Black partner in my law firm, but we still face challenges getting access to capital. And so to answer your question, my brother and I funded all of our businesses by ourselves. We've never taken money, which is, I think, is a thing to...
Thanks, bro.
Yeah. Yeah,
That is commendable, but it's also troublesome.
Troublesome, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's commendable, but it's not, I'm not saying it to be a pat on the back. I'm saying it to be, that's an inherent problem, mm-hmm. right? Because these issues don't happen to the majority. They don't happen to other communities, right? So I think it's specific to communities of color that face these challenges. And so I'm like, damn, I'm like doing everything I can to really show that we have done everything from a business perspective, but we still have challenges. And so to answer your question, no, we've not taken any like real debt. We've never taken like any investors. We've really leveraged money from one business to go the other, but that's not scalable. You can't scale a business globally like that, right? And so I think it's conversations like this, networks like these brothers are establishing that really provide access to resources that you need to grow and scale a business. Because I think it's one thing to talk about starting the business, and there's a completely different thing talking about scaling a business. And as we think globally, we need to think, how can we get more resource to support the mission and the impact we're trying to make?
Yeah, one of the things they told us early on through the journey, same thing, everything we've done, we've self-funded. It was, you don't get money or try to get loan money out or get money loaned to you because you need it. You get it because you want to scale. Another thing we were taught was like, hey, maybe it's the approach. And so I wonder, as you go through these things, when after you evaluate and you obviously want to scale, what is the approach? Does it change now for you? Or what are some of the tips for somebody who's actually thinking, I want to start a business, I need to get funding. If you're facing challenges, what am I going to look like? What are some tips that I can use when I approach to go about money being loaned to my business?
Yeah, I mean, definitely do your diligence, do your research. I think there's definitely different types of like funds and grants and different programs out there that can be supportive for sure. And so I'm not saying things don't exist. I think ultimately what it really comes down to is your network. Some of these cats who don't always look like us, they're good opportunities just because they're Bob's son, right? And I think we need to be better about supporting each other to ultimately create community and spaces that we can ultimately have global success from a business perspective. And so I think being in spaces like this where you're meeting people, opportunities can be afforded to you, I think that's where the magic happens. In addition to the other resources that exist online, traditional financing, venture financing, things like that, that are specific to people that look like us as well. But I think being in spaces where you're ultimately cultivating relationships that can lead to those type of resources, and just being in spaces that you have the information. Knowledge is a power, right? So I think it's continuing to be in spaces that you can elevate your thought process, elevate your relationships, and continue to kind of like drive for whatever type of venture you're looking to do.
So I know you work with the government on a certain level, and I'm sure you have relationships with the government in Kenya and probably other places in Africa. This problem, as far as access to capital, we spoke with the vice president about, and it's a heated election season, right? So what role do you think the government should play in this or have some level of accountability so people can actually hold their elected officials accountable or at least the very least ask questions. Because I think that the government doesn't solve the problem, but it can help the problem in a certain way. So how do you think the government plays a role in access to capital conversation?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of funds are public funds, right? For some of the things that we're talking about. And so I think your state, your local, your federal kind of government officials are critical because they're allocating the dollars that go to support small businesses. They're allocating the dollars that support community-run businesses. And so I think they're critically important because they ultimately make the decisions. And so I think it's right to hold your public and elected officials accountable. But I think oftentimes we don't...
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Hi, I'm Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesack and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Want to avoid common pitfalls and get straight to the insights that drive success? Join me and recognize names like John Mackey of Whole Foods and Joe DeSena of Spartan as we unpack the hard-earned lessons from their journeys. Ready to streamline your path to success? Listen to Let Me Save You 25 Years on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
Always know who they are, right? I think we know the president, we know the vice president, we know maybe our governor, maybe our mayor, but those folks are obviously vitally important, but the folks who are actually making the decisions are the city councilors, they're your ANC rep, they're folks within your district of operation that ultimately have grant funding, have access to capital that you might not know of. And so I think the diligence is on you as an entrepreneur as well to make sure you're understanding who those people are, you have knowledge of who they are, and you're doing your own outreach. Because I don't think there's an expectation they're going to come to you and just give you a windfall, right? And I think sometimes there's a misnomer that there's some innate obligation they have to you, and they do as you're their constituents. But I think as a business owner, you have to be driving your business forward and do whatever you can to build those relationships.
But then also, it's very important because does everybody know who Don Peebles is?
Yes.
Yeah, he's from right up the road in D.C. And he's almost a billionaire. I think he's worth like $700, $800 million. He's the most successful black real estate developer in American history. If you talk to him, he always credits his success to one person. Does anybody know who that one person is? Mayor Marion Barry. And when he was in office, he had an initiative that I think it was like 30% of all contracting had to go to black developers. So he was a young developer. He didn't have any money. But long story short, the mayor gave him his start. And most major cities in America have black mayors, right? So when we was having a conversation, he was like, everybody's focused on Trump, Biden, but mayors have a lot of responsibility as far as economic empowerment and different things of that nature as well. So you're right. You have to be focused on the local officials. But I think the private public partnership is something that's not talked about enough, because if a mayor essentially created a black billionaire, there's only like 10 of them in America, then more wealth can be generated with the help from elected officials, I think.
100%. But I think that was based upon the relationship too, right? And so I think the public-private partnerships are critically important. But I think Mr. Peoples was very genuine and intentional about really building relationship with the mayor.
It wasn't charity.
He
put himself in position.
Yeah. And actually, I have a real quick Don Peoples story too. And I think he doesn't know me. And we met just one time. I'll never forget. We met about 15 years ago at his house. He was doing some event. And I met him. And I said, "Yo, Mr. Peoples, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm a young lawyer. But I, you know, ultimately, when they get into real estate one day and maybe even entrepreneurship one day." And he's like, give me your card. I'll never forget it. That following week, I got his book sent to my office in a whole page inscription telling me about to continue the dream, continue the work, and you'll continue to be successful. And some other things too. But I think that level of care still stays in my head. And I'm glad you mentioned him, because he's such a solid brother and he's doing amazing things. But I think those moments, I always say there's few moments in life that really matter. And that was a moment that really mattered that helped me change the trajectory of how I thought from like a business standpoint I could be achieved.
When you went over your portfolio as you came out, I'm looking at 7 different businesses and industries. And obviously we talked about HQ and we talked about the social network. But you also mentioned the global call center, where 21,000 Africans are employed. In the age of automation, we always talk about AI. I wonder, how does it affect the business? Is this something that you look at in terms of business, or are you looking to employ more people and go against the grain of technology? How do you view that for the call center business?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That's something we talk about all the time. So obviously AI is super important. So we incorporate technology in all of our operations. But I think what's unique to an African is empathy, compassion, understanding. And sometimes you cannot replace that with a robot, right? Or with technology, with AI. And so we talk to clients, especially American companies, even some companies in Europe and across other kind of geos as well. These are people that have been served such a raw deal, but they have such an empathetic, opportunistic like personality that they believed in like every opportunity is something they should be really grateful for. And so calls that are very challenging, that need a level of empathy, understanding, those are the type of clients we take. And so AI is not going to kind of take over our business, because I think at the end of the day, you still need empathetic people. When your plane gets delayed, your plane gets canceled, you're stranded in the airport, you need someone to empathize with you. And so that's really what we train. We need people to be compassionate, understanding, but also proactive and smart and intelligent as well. And so I think that's unique to Africa a lot, right? And I think that's what is kind of our driving force. And I think that's how we've been able to grow across the continent.
That's incredible. Now, I'm looking at the businesses again. We got the call center. We got the hospitality. Let's talk about the restaurant business. That's something that obviously a lot of people in our community either try to thrive or have aspirations to thrive inside that. A challenging business nonetheless. Talk about some of the things that you face and the goals for the restaurant. Is it Kata? Did I say it right?
It's called Kata. Yeah, K-A-T-A. So it's an Asian fusion tapas and kind of cocktail restaurant. And so the interesting genesis of the restaurant was my brother, well, with all of our businesses, we saw gaps and we filled gaps, right? So they just weren't like some random businesses we started. We wanted to ultimately control the supply chain. And so why would we have a marketing company? And then when a client needed events, we would outsource an event company. So we started an event company. Why would we have a diversity company that didn't also have like a wellness component, because the clients needed wellness? And so we grew organically based upon identifying needs. And the story of Kata was the first floor of our building became available about 9 months ago. And I remember one of the local bars told me, he's like, "Yo, JB, every guy, time you guys have events, we do crazy numbers." I'm like, "Well, why are we pushing all this business to all these other places where we are actually convening people?" And then ultimately, right or wrong, we want everybody in the community to do well. But I was like, we need to actually continue to control that member that guest experience. And so it was like a no-brainer. We had the opportunity to open the restaurant because now we can really guide the guest across the whole experience and they don't have to go anywhere else.
One-stop shop.
One-stop shop.
The call center thing is interesting though, because so somebody just sent me, I just got educated on this artificial intelligence that responds to people, like cold calling, right? And I was just testing it out and it's kind of scary because I feel like it's really good at answering questions. And the thing about the AI is that it gets more intelligent by the day. So even what you're saying as far as it not having emotional intelligence, but that's like the next level of AI, right? To program it to have like a high level of emotional intelligence, just like it has general intelligence. So at some point in time, the AI is going to be able to do that, right? So for you as a business owner, that's beneficial because you save money, but it's also scary because it's like that's 21,000 people just in your company that's unemployed, right? So how do you see the future of like just business in general with so many jobs eventually will be replaced by AI? There's no way around it, right? Like, what is your thought process on that kind of looking in the future?
Yeah, well, I think it's something we've seen for the last multiple decades, right? With the expansion of technology, I don't think this is going to be any different. I think technology ultimately, while it might take away jobs, it also creates jobs and it creates opportunities. I think as business owners and we think about talking about wealth and even specific to call center, I think you always have to pivot. You always have to adapt. You always have to come up with new ways to support your business based upon technology and how it evolves. But I think we've been good about understanding things and getting ahead of things. And so, yes, clearly it's going to affect kind of some needs and we'll just have to pivot and adjust, but it also might create more opportunities for employment too, right? And so we just never know, but we also want to stay ahead of things and really focused on not how is technology going to take things away, but how is technology going to provide more opportunities?
Before we get out of here, I definitely want to talk about, we talk about the businesses, but I know something that's near and dear to you is giving back. So philanthropy is something that's obviously part of the portfolio. I saw the foundation, correct me if I'm wrong, Icon to ICAN?
Icon to ICAN, yep.
The title is fire.
Thank you.
Talk about the work that you're doing there and the origin of it.
Yeah, no, thank you. See, these brothers came well prepared, man. I forgot to even mention that. So, I mean,
we've done this a few times.
Yeah. I believe that, man. Y'all, your reputation precedes you. So we grew up in a house with a mother that was a successful pediatrician, but at her core, she was a community activist and a community advocate. And so we learned early on, while entrepreneurship and wealth is all important, but if you're not giving back to your community, then what are you really leaving behind? And so we've always moved, even before launching our businesses, through a lens of advocacy. And so the genesis of our foundation was about 10 years ago, we had launched some mentorship programs back home in San Antonio because we just saw the need. And so we just believed in giving back. And so Visa, through another platform, which is a celebrity speaker series platform called Icon Talks, we're able to like mobilize community, get celebrities involved to support the foundation work. But at its core, we wanted to provide mentorship programs, empowerment programs for kids that look like us, because oftentimes those kids don't have exposure. And so the genesis was just innate to who we were as people, just to understand that too much is given, much is required. And we believed in the importance of giving back. And so now our mentorship programs across schools in Texas, we're across 6 schools across the state of Texas. And we wanted to stay in Texas because that's where we're from. And that's where we saw the need. And that's where we were exposed to the need throughout our whole upbringing. And so we're super proud of that work. And I'm sorry I didn't mention that before, but see, my brother reminded me, so I appreciate you.
So how are you able to multitask? I know as far as having so many different verticals, so many different businesses, a lot of people burn themselves out or they spread themselves too thin. So how are you able to stay on top and make sure that every business is running optimal?
No, that's a great question. Every day isn't easy, but I think team is everything. I think you can never grow a successful business by yourself. I think you have to rely on people, you have to invest in people, and you have to allow people to do what they do best. And so, again, I keep pointing out our general manager, Nani from HQ DC House, she's the best at what she does. And right. So I think it's a testament to people. I think it's also a testament to understanding who you are and how you operate as a business owner. Right. I know what I do well and I know what I don't do well. And so staying out the mess of things that you don't do well, because I think that can ultimately lead to chaos. And I think, again, for us, our journey has been very pragmatic, very practical, very intentional based upon need. And so I think that's allowed us to grow strategically without growing in like an illogical way. But again, it's not easy. I mean, I always say, man, the level of decision fatigue I have on a daily basis is freaking massive, right? You're making 200, 300 decisions in one day. You're on calls in Nairobi, then you're at a call for HQ, then you're doing an event at the White House. And so the level of kind of multitasking, I'm not going to lie, it can be over taxing at times. But I think that's when you have to like take a step back, really, really focus on your mental health, really focus on taking time to really reflect, be appreciative. And then sometimes just say, hey, I can't do it today, bro. You got to step in for me, man. I got to take a day. Right. I think that's OK. And one of the panelists in the conversation upstairs said earlier, a former football player, Ray Rice from the Baltimore Ravens, he said he wants his legacy to be that black men specifically can be vulnerable and say they need help. And so I think that is what I've taken from kind of a critical piece with today and the time moving in my life is just sometimes when it becomes overtaxing, sometimes when it looks like the world is ending and you are so overcome with anxiety and so much going on and so many pieces, take a step back and at those moments just ask for help.
Yeah. I wonder, as I'm listening to you talk, you know, we always tend to ask people, what's the 5 to 10 year vision or the goal? Is that your approach, or is it because you're feeling needs? Is it a day to day thing, right? There could be a need that comes up next month and we have to fulfill that. So in terms, like, people always ask you, have you earned your leisure? Like, no, there's still so much to go. How do you approach this? Is it long-term goals, or it's need-based? As it comes, we'll approach it and see if we can take it on.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of both, right? So at the micro level, it's we identify gaps and try to fill them, right? But not be reckless and kind of not intentional about it or strategic about it. But we pivot daily, which you have to pivot, right? But we are identifying gaps that need to be filled. But at the macro level, I think we're truly stepping into our purpose now. And our purpose from like a business standpoint is really to change the circumstances, the narrative, and the opportunities for Black people around the world. And so I'm so, so, so focused on that purpose now. And that's core to who we are. And so while a gap might exist that we need to fill, but if it's not innate to that purpose, we won't work on that, right? And so now as we do work in Africa, we're launching this global network, we see our vision even clearer. We see our goals even clearer, but they're so macro, but the micro kind of things we do on a daily basis, they have to be working towards a micro. But when you say 5 year, 10 year, 15 year plan, we've done those exercises, but we've been successful because we've been able to identify things, pivot, and modify our businesses to support the times that we're in. I think sometimes, don't get me wrong, KPIs, objectives, all those things are super important goals. But I think sometimes when you're not looking at the present and too focused on the future, you can miss things. And so we want to maintain focus on the future, but also be actively changing things in the present to support, you know, the business.
So my last question is leadership. What lessons have you learned and what advice could you give to entrepreneurs as far as being a leader and managing people?
Yeah. So generally speaking, the most important, not even generally speaking, transparently speaking, the most important thing about a business are your people. Without your people, there is no business, right? And so how do you create a culture that encourages innovation, that encourages proactivity, that encourages accountability, that encourages teammanship, that encourages people working towards kind of one common goal? And I think a lot of that leadership has come from my brother. My brother, again, served in the military for 13 years. And I think using that framework, those leadership principles from West Point, really have been invaluable. And then also, just so you all know, I come from a military background. I didn't go to military college, but I went to military school from second to 12th grade. Ask my mom why she sent me to military school at second grade. I didn't know you could even do that. But that taught me those principles too, of like teammanship, of like core value. And so I think for us, it's investing in people, understanding that culture is important, and ultimately allowing people to be people. People make mistakes, right? And then also, I think not everybody is the right fit for your organization. And so I always lead with the heart of compassion. My brother leads with like an iron fist sometimes. And so I think it's important to have that level of combination across like the owners, because you can't always be the heart. Sometimes you need to be kind of the harder feature as well.
I'm glad you said the word mistake, because on my mind, I'm thinking to myself, think about your biggest financial mistake, right? Then I also want you to think about the biggest lesson you learned from that mistake.
Yeah, that's a great question. Our biggest financial mistake. Wow, okay. So I think our biggest financial mistake, and this is something recent, I'm not going to obviously mention any names specifically, but it was entering into, and this sounds crazy coming from a lawyer right now, entering into a partnership with someone that you believed in the nobility of the mission and of the purpose, but you didn't necessarily paper it right, because you believed it was a bigger calling and you believed that they were on the same page and you believed that it was a common mission, that you all wanted to do the same thing and make it work, but you didn't paper the transaction appropriately. So you put money into it without having the legalese in place. And so that was a horrible decision coming from a lawyer, but it was guided by who we thought we were working with and we were doing something that was noble. But the lesson from that is, even in the most noble of endeavors, you think this person was ordained by Jesus Christ himself, you need to paper these transactions and believe in framing a business like a business should be framed and not taking risks that are unnecessary, because ultimately, even in the best of situations, it can sometimes be the worst.
So no handshake agreements.
Hell no.
Not a fan of that.
No paper bag ones either?
No, man. From a 13-year practitioner to make that mistake like 6 months ago is just, it's bananas.
Happens to the best of us.
So, okay, you're a trained lawyer, right? That doesn't always relate to entrepreneurship. A lot of times that's like being a doctor, like you're skilled in something, but a lot of times that doesn't mean that you're going to be a great business owner. So how did you make that transition in your mind to be an entrepreneur when you went to school and you were, you know, on the pathway and just working law?
Yeah, no, it's a completely different shift in mindset, but I think it's also a lot of complementary skill sets that are applicable to both industries. I think it's attention to detail. I think it's accountability. I think it's people skills. I think it's a lot of showmanship. I mean, to be an entrepreneur, you got to be charismatic. You got to talk to people. You got to ask people for things. You got to be genuine. You got to be connective. And so I think I was a litigator for the first 5 years of my practice, and the theatrics of being in the courtroom teach you that you have to connect with people on different levels and connect with different types of people. And so I think a lot of those skills were very applicable to the entrepreneurship space. But again, I leaned on my brother from his kind of corporate experience to bring those corporate chops. I'd never been in a boardroom. I've been like in a courtroom, but that's different than a boardroom, right? I had never been in spaces where big money deals are talked about, but my brother was the CDO of Citibank. And so he worked in finance. He knew those spaces. And so, and the level of detail he kind of moves with and the pragmatism that he moves with, the two kind of provided that structure that we needed. And again, talking about complementary skill sets, like I'm the people guy. Right. I knew I was the people guy. Right. I know I can help with BD. I can drive engagement. I have relationships. And so, again, understanding my skill set, understanding Hill's skill set, and making sure that we're complementing not only our partnership, but the business was critically important. And that didn't happen overnight. That didn't happen overnight. It took time. It took honest conversations. My mom always says, I talked to my brother maybe, and not even going to test this, maybe, no BS, 25 times. And not like 25 minutes, like 25 times throughout the day, because we're constantly strategizing. I'm sure you guys are the same. And so I think understanding your partner and understanding the business and ultimately trying to leverage each other's skill sets to grow the business is important, but it just being accountable and understanding where gaps exist and continuing to grow.
Absolutely. Clap it up for that. That's good. I want Raven and Anthony to stand up really quickly. Could y'all stand up? Can y'all stand up? Let's clap it up for them. And John, I want to talk to you about the time when, obviously, when we see a wealth summit like this.
Are they standing up?
Yeah, they're going to stand up. I want to acknowledge them. Because what we're seeing here.
Sure, if they had to sit back down.
Not yet.
It's awkward if you give somebody instructions.
No. I just want them to stand up. Because I want them to be acknowledged in this moment. Because what we're in the midst of is a financial revolution. And we're seeing it happen at this level, right? We're seeing a couple work together. We're seeing them call on Black men to work together. We're seeing it. But we've also been in spaces where at the highest level, we don't see people working together, right? Our wealthiest, our elite don't work together as much. I want you to take a moment. What do you think about the time we're in terms of this financial movement as you see it as an entrepreneur now in this space? Is this something and what are the characteristics that we need to keep to have this going? Thank y'all for standing.
Yes, definitely a round of applause. Thank you guys so much. I mean, to be honest, we need more people like you and you. We need more people like you and you who are actually creating spaces for us to come together. I'm so excited what you guys have done because you created something that's never been done before. Mm. I think you're creating genuine conversations for people to learn, to gather insights, to build relationships, to share resources that had never been done at the scale you guys are doing in our communities. And so I applaud you all for all the work that you all are doing. It's unbelievable. And I know you all probably get the accolades and people say, thank you so much. But I don't know if you truly realize the impact that you guys are making around the globe, right? In providing inspiration, in providing exposure and opportunity for people, that's a reward that cannot be overstated. So I just want to say thank you guys. And then likewise to you all, I think about wealth in two different approaches. I think obviously you think about wealth in the traditional like monetary aspects of wealth, but I think what you all are doing is bigger than that. I think you all are approaching wealth from a mindset. And I think wealth really is a mindset. And I think the words have been used all day around leading from an abundance mindset, leading from a community mindset, leading from a collective action mindset. But I think ultimately, that all is encompassed in leading from like a wealth mindset. And the wealth mindset is working together, building partnerships. What I've felt the most joy from today is the genuine excitement to build together. And that's something you don't feel very often. And so I think to be in spaces that we can be in where we're fostering relationships and growing together, I think that's going to ultimately rectify some of the situations where folks are not doing that. I think as we continue to facilitate community, we continue to hold more events like this and build relationships, I think that's going to change the narrative for our people. And so, again, I applaud both of you all for doing all the great work you're doing.
What's one last word you can leave, you know, any entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur with?
One last word, and it's a word in kind of an approach I've always mentioned in every conversation I give. I say, never stop dreaming, right? As an entrepreneur, you have to be a dreamer. And I dream a new dream every single day, right? And I think those dreams can ultimately become goals. They can become objectives. They become things that you ultimately put into motion. But being a dreamer is critically important to entrepreneurship. And say, never let anybody distinguish or extinguish your dream, right? And so, but I think a dream without action will come without any type of actual coming to fruition. So I think continue to dream, put action behind it, put team behind it, and it'll all work out.
Make some noise, ladies and gentlemen.
Appreciate
it.
John Byrne.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express.
4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.